Blog Talk Radio.
Training facility to the field with ability. Athletes are working hard, the progression is stressing. People are set, some of the passing. It's the smell of the grass and the pain and the action. The focus, the passion, the thought of the plaque and the trophy all made out to your name. It's the money, it's the fame, it's the feeling they get when they're playing in the game. What's the number on their back and the representative name? It's MJ playing way back in the day. It's the glory, it's scoring. This is story, this is Sports Nation. It's been this way for generations. Pro Sports Extra is where I get my information. Athletes with their pursuits and endeavors. Sports will entertain the whole world. It'll be this way forever. And for more of that, we going live to Trevor the Expert.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Trevor Your End Podcast, where I go one-on-one with different comedians, celebrities, musicians, business owners, streamers, and did I mention future Hall of Famers? I've had on guests like Jay Glazer from Fox Sports, Ricky Williams, Bryant McKinney, Warwick Dunn, gold medalist Nick Baumgartner, streetball legend Pat The Rock. This new season of episodes will air every Tuesday and Thursday, so be sure to subscribe, rate, and turn your notifications on. But first up, we have our first guest on this new podcast series. I'm going to welcome on comedian and Barstool Sports own Sean Latham. How's it going, bro?
Hey, buddy. How's it going? Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it a lot. Thanks for hopping on. So first on, man, I just want to kind of first up, I know you're, sitting there celebrating, getting ready for the Super Bowl and getting ready for Rough and Rowdy. So let's jump into Rough and Rowdy. Let's get up to your first Rough and Rowdy against Smitty. All right. Let's go through the training you went through then against the training you're going through now.
Training I went through then was a lot more raw. I was with a college football training, like a trainer. So he had, that's what his degree was in. That's what he worked on several colleges, at several universities. So we trained, we did a lot of sparring. I sparred a lot of dudes. We worked a lot of bag work. This time is a little different. Which, by the way, last time I also had some knee pain, so I couldn't run distance. But I had that work looked at with a chiropractor somehow and made it all better. And now I could run. So I think my cardio will be better this time. I've been crushing, 2-3 miles 5 days a week before my workouts even start. It's more of a centered on actual boxing technique. These are old school boxers I'm training with at Mendez Gym in Manhattan. They're real good what they do. It's a real fun environment, but we work on a lot of technique, a lot of footwork, a lot of, just basics, starting out with jabs and going from there, and, how to set up the rest of your, punches and combinations and recognize things and a lot of sparring. So I'm really excited. I think the running will help different. I was still doing a lot of cardio before, but this time I'm just running so much more than I ran before.
For sure. So the person you're going up against, Matt Light, this kind of douchey comedian, I kind of looked up some videos. It all kind of seemed like some WWE stunts and some guy who kind of seems like a nobody. You're going up against him. Can you talk about just the difference, going up against Smitty, who was kind of a coworker, and now going up against Matt Light, who you might have more like of an edge towards?
Well, the difference was me and Smitty never had beef, so it was just concocted within the work, within work. They were like, well, who else would do it? I had talked to Prez before the Hank and Tex fight, and he was randomly saying, would anybody, if anybody's interested, in fighting. So I was like, I had already been training for like a year just on my own on the side, jiu-jitsu and boxing. And then, when this opportunity came, I was like, well, I might as well try it. I'm not getting younger. I was 39 at the time. So I did it. We had no beef. We talked shit, but it was just basically normal about to fight shit. It wasn't real deep rooted.
Right.
But this kid I'm fighting this time, he's just a piece of shit. He's trying to bully my homie Austin Taylor, who Ooh. Is also a Barstool employee who worked his ass off to get that job. And he does great content. He gets good views. So I saw that and I didn't like it one bit. So I let him know that I didn't like what he was up to. And I talked some shit. And by the way, am I supposed to, was that, Am I supposed to say that word, or I'm not sure.
I don't care. You can say whatever you want. I don't give a shit.
So I called my producer Booze, and I said, hey, find out how much this dude weighs, because if he weighs enough, I'll offer to fight him. You know, like that way I can fight a troll, I can fight a bully. He's also a hack comic who just emulates wrestling on stage, but you know, he acts like he's bigger than he is. I've talked to other local dudes who are like, yeah, that guy's a piece of shit, you know? So then I find out, like, you know, a few weeks later, he's only 5'6" or 5'7", which, I mean, I'm 6'2", but at the beginning, I had no idea how tall the kid is. He's just talking shit. I want to fight him. You know, he weighs 205. I was 220 at the time. I'm just like, well, there's no height requirement in fighting. It's, you know, it's weight. And we're already that far in, so I just said, you know, I'm not going to feel bad for the guy if he wants to, you know, this is the whole point of fighting a Twitter troll. You know, you want to run your mouth and talk to this big game. Well, let's find out. So I think at the end of the day, I don't care that he's 6 inches shorter than me. You know, I'm training like I'm fighting.
You just want to kick his ass.
You know? Yeah, I want to beat his ass, and I'm training for real. He's taking this as a joke, which is great. I mean, if you don't want to take this serious, that's your prerogative. But I'm taking it serious. I don't care who I'm fighting. I'm also, you know, you also could be a six figure amount of people watching this. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
for sure.
You know, he's over here. Oh, you taking it so serious? You're not very entertaining. I'm like, this isn't. I'm not a clown. I'm a comedian. I do stand up.
Right.
I'm funny when I need to be. I'm funny. I have a radio show where we talk about comedic stuff. My cooking show is a comedic based. You know, but fighting has nothing to do with comedy.
Why would you want to go in there and, you know, why would you want to kind of go in there being cocky ahead of time, where, especially when last fight, you know, you fought Smitty, you lost. Why would you kind of be this cocky guy? You know, you need to be behind the scenes more and come up. As with this dude, he's a nobody, so he needs to be that type of comedy guy and needs to get his name out more so more Barstool people hear about him. Because who is Matt Light? Nobody knows him.
Yeah, and he also hates on Barstool. He talks so much shit about Stoolies in general, about being a bunch of assholes. So he's not going to gain a fan from Barstool either way. And that's why I only call him the hack. I don't say his name, because he's a hack comedian. He's literally the epitome of the term. He only does local jokes, because because it's safe. You know, anything that's safe, a hack will do. A hack will, you know, if you sell out arenas and you want to do the Stone Cold thing, well, that's a good celebration at the end, because obviously you're selling out a monster amount of tickets. But if that's all you have is jumping off ladders and choke slamming chicks through tables and jumping through tables and stone colding beers, walking off like you're Stone Cold Steve Austin, then you're emulating somebody else. You're not a you're not a creator. You're not a comedian. You're a hack doing other people's stuff. And that's what he is. And I can't stand a hack, because, you know, as a comedian, you got to work hard for every laugh. And the point is that you want to create that content yourself out of your own brain, so that, you know, you can get – so you have your own personal act. That's something that's yours. And he doesn't have that.
For sure.
He can't stand it. I get to fight four different fronts here, which is nice.
I'm excited. So that fight's Friday, right?
Yeah, it's this Friday. It starts at 7:30. I think our fight's like 20. Probably the last few I've been to, and the one I was in was, we weren't at the very end. We were in the middle.
Uh-huh.
So
watch the entire thing.
Yeah, the middle of the event is where the main event's middle event is where the main event fights.
Okay. So another fight that I want to talk about that's happening. Marty Mush versus Matt Brown. Who do you have?
Although both my friends, I got Matt Brown on this all day.
Ooh.
I train with Matt Brown every night. I've seen him. I've sparred with him. You know, I've been hit by him. You know, he's got even a little bit of experience by coming out of, you know, fighting these backyard things in college. And after sparring him, I just don't think I see Marty Mush being able to overcome what Matt Brown's going to do to him. But Marty Bush, great dude, funny, good guy. You know what I mean? But,
for sure.
You know, that ain't my beef, but I'm just saying what I think's going to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's kind of move backwards here. Let's talk about kind of your start at Barstool. You know, I've been following Barstool for a while, and I kind of saw your comedic before Barstool. But, you know, you kind of just came out of nowhere with joining the Pat McAfee show as, like, from someone watching in from Barstool. You know, I'm listening to the Pat McAfee show, and then here's this Sean Latham. Can you talk about what the Pat McAfee show meant for you and the start of your career at Barstool?
You know, it was actually a really big deal. It was a really big deal for me. I was already headlining. I was, you know, I was doing my thing. I had already had a couple of, you know, Comedy Central credits. But, you know, me and him were friends first. Before we started working together, we just hit it off as, you know, buddies. He saw me do stand-up one night, and he asked me to open for him. And then that's how we started becoming – and then after that, though, but the show that he asked me to open for him wasn't for, like, a couple of months. So I might have met him in February, and the show was in April or end of March, something like that. So anyways, we ended up just starting to hang out. He was in the off season. This was the last year before – this was the final off season before his final year. And we just became really good friends, and we started hanging out all the time. And then, you know, I would help him, like – you know, I'd show him how I write jokes, and then we would look at material he's done, and we would talk about it. So then I'd be like, you know, he'd like, oh, you should do a pop-up show to get ready, you know, because I used to work with Fluffy, Gabriel Iglesias, and he would do pop-up shows. He'd be like, hey, I got a day off Monday. I'll be with you guys. Why don't we do a show at the Denver Improv? And he would just announce it that morning. It would sell out, you know, and it's called it a pop-up show. So that's what, you know, Pat did that one time. Very generous, great dude. We saw, you know, he bought me a Harley so we could ride together. And we were just really good friends. And then I said, you know, podcast, you'd be great at podcasting. You know, you're so, you know, I'm sure you sell ad space. You know, you got the crowd. And then we started doing some podcasts. But then the season started, his final season. And then we didn't really have time for that. When they were losing a lot, he didn't want to show the team he's out here having a great time doing podcasts. So we didn't really – we would record some, but then we'd skip weeks at a time. And then that's when he got the offer for Barstool and he retired. And then that's when, a little bit after that, he brought me on. You know, he asked me, at the time I was in Indianapolis still, and I was doing, you know, I always cook at home but I would always do Snapchats with my cooking, you know, just having a good time, talking shit, whatever, just doing my $20 chef thing, but not really, because it wasn't a show idea then. So then he said, right, hey, if I give you a show, and if I produce a show for you, what would you want to be doing? And I said, well, everybody likes this cooking show, my cooking snaps. Maybe I'll just do a cooking show. And he said, okay, well, let's try it. And then we started filming it. And then he was already with Barstool. Obviously, I worked under him at his office in Heartland. And that's it. We just did our thing every day. It was awesome. I mean, it was the best. It's such a great workplace. We could play, you know, you get to shoot around. You know, there's no just sitting at your desk downtime. Like, you know, motion creates emotion, and that's how it is there. In between podcasts, or, you know, or between Sirius and the podcast, we would shoot around. We'd always have, and that's when we would create ideas, or we'd play cornhole and, you know, talk about ideas. It was just a really cool thing going on there, you know, like a fun factory of content ideas and creation. So that's how I ended up there, and luckily my show kept getting better and better, and I started selling ad space, which is what's the most important, you know, because Barstool, you're your own person. You know, we're all a group.
For sure.
We're all coworkers, but we all have our own ideas, and you have to have your thing. So, like, you're in charge of, you know, you obviously become more of us. You become paid more if you are more valuable in the ad revs department. So if your show sells ads, then you'll be more valuable and you get a better contract, you know, so. That's why I had already sold a bunch of ads, so that's why whenever Pat decided not to work with Barstool, he was basically told me that, I love you, you're my boy, but it's time for you to go do your own thing. I can't, because he couldn't afford to pay my contract. So he gave me his blessing, and we're off to New York I went.
You mentioned touring with Fluffy. Can we kind of go back to that as well? You know, everybody loves watching Fluffy, Gabriel Iglesias. I think you toured with him twice. Can you just kind of talk about the first time and the second time, the differences, and just being on stage with someone of his caliber?
Well, Gabriel is a really generous dude. So he had like four or five people opening at all times normally. You know, we all do 10 minutes. I got that opportunity because I used to work as an improv when I very first started in the comedy world. I was a waiter at the Improv in Tempe, Arizona in 2001 and 2002. And, That's how I met Gabriel Iglesias and Felipe Esparza. But I would hang out with Felipe, not really Gabriel. And then I started hanging out with their merch guy who sold all the merch. He was really cool, as a dude named Ivan. And me and Ivan became really good friends. And then when I moved to L.A. for stand-up, I started hanging out with Ivan. And then a couple times he invited me to the improv to hang out. And then Gabriel would give me a guest set. And that's how it started. And then I just, you know, it was several tours. But the second tour was better personally, because when I first got on with him, I first started working with Fluffy. I was also helping with merchandise. And then I worked my way up through stage. And then, you know, I got to audition for Comedy Central. And then that's when I got, you know, I stopped doing the merch. And then I was full-time on the Stand Up Revolution tour as one of the comedians from the show. And that was really awesome. Gabriel's great. I mean, you get a salary, a weekly salary. You don't have to pay for any travel. You don't pay for any food. You just, I mean, it's like living in a dream. It's not even, you know, a tour bus with everything you need. You know, it was really amazing. But it's also, it was good to leave it, because I was there because of he decided, you know, that he liked me enough to come along. It wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't my thing. It was his thing that he was just being generous enough to bring me along for.
Right, so you kind of wanted to prove yourself.
Great crowds. Yeah, great guy, amazing crowds. I mean, Gabriel's an amazing comedian. He's just another force to be reckoned with. He's another force on another level. It's like people love him so much, and what he does, the numbers he does, is unbelievable.
So growing up, were you always like the class clown, or how did comedy kind of come to you?
Yeah, I was always Mr. Funny Guy. I guess I moved a lot as a kid, so when you move a lot, I kind of found humor was the way to get in quick. You know, like if you were funny, people accepted you quicker than if not, you know? So, I just ended up being a jokester, and it just, you know, but I always would walk a line, because I couldn't be a jokester to where I would get in trouble, because my mom would beat my ass. My mom was very, she was very strict, and there was no, if you mess around or disrespect adults, you know, you would get in trouble. So I had to have that fine line where it was funny but also likable for the other teachers. So that's what happened.
For sure.
And then I got a job at the improv, and I started doing open mics.
So then you ended up doing your first big screen performance. I think it was 2009, and I'm Not Like That No More, correct?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, never watched it, but from the preview and the little video clip I watched, it seemed just kind of like your average stoner type of movie. What was it like being part of that movie, and can you kind of give us a little bit of information about it?
Yeah, that was a movie called I'm Not Like That No More. That was based off Felipe Esparza's comedy. He was in another movie, and the producer, he gave the executive producer his CD, and they liked it, and they decided to make a movie, so I wasn't supposed to be in it, and then the director came over. I was roommates with Felipe at the time. And then the director came over. It was myself, Felipe, and Edwin, and then another really hilarious comedian, Edwin San Juan, was there. And the director came over, and we started having a writing session for the movie. And then he comes back with a script with all three of us in it, which was a surprise to everybody. No one had any idea that he was going to do that. So next thing I know, I had to start taking acting classes, because I was in 45 pages of a script in a movie. We all became, you know, we were all cool. We had a great time filming it. It was low budget, obviously. Small film. It had, you know, it did release in some theaters, but not very much, because it didn't have that kind of money to back it up. But it was a really great experience. You know, I got to just play myself more than anything. You know, we got to improv lines. We got to have a good time. I'm still really good friends with that director. Now, you know, that the whole thing. Plus, working with Paul Rodriguez is awesome. Paul Rodriguez is one of my favorite dudes on earth. He's such a nice guy. He's so funny. He works hard. He, you know, he's in his 50s, still working hard. It's just another guy you can look up to, you know, and understand that if you can keep working, you know, you can keep working. There is no age gap on this game. Look at some of these guys. They get their brilliant – some of the most, their most funny, most brilliant stuff is, you know, in their 50s and 60s, which is inspiring to me personally as a 40-year-old. You know, I got years and years to go.
Right, and that's what I was actually going to kind of bring up next as we kind of wrap this up. What is next? You know, you've done stand-up. You've done Man on the Street videos, you've blogged for Barstool, you've done the $20 Chef, you've fought at Rough and Rowdy. Do you know what's next, or is it just kind of just build up these things?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I just, this is my first year of my own radio show. That's, you know, I'm really enjoying doing that, because, you know, we get 1 hour a day, Monday through Friday. It's a great time slot. Otherwise, you know, I'm just going with the flow right now. Whatever comes, you know, I'm enjoying doing the rough and rowdy. When I do it, you know, I get to be healthy, force myself to work out, you know, and be part of content. And it's pretty ballsy, so I'm really enjoying that aspect of it. Overall, Barstool brings so much opportunity. You know, there's any direction. There's so much random stuff that comes up that I just
right, a lot of content.
All right, I'll do that. Yeah, so other than that, I mean, I have no real – my plan is to keep perfecting what I'm doing and getting better at stand-up. I still, you know, I still do stand-up regularly. You know, and that's the challenge to me personally is just coming up. My next move is, you know, get my act cleaner, you know, stronger, and film it, you know, and put it out there. And other than that, you know, I just want to keep touring, working on my act. At the end of the day, it's all about the comedy. Everything's about the stand-up. The stand-up brings everything.
Right.
It brings all opportunity. It brings, you know, doing that many years of stand-up and all those different places made me be able to be who I am so that I can do my cooking show or my radio show, you know? So that's mainly it, is just keep pushing with the stand-up and keep doing my job with Barstool and just kind of see wherever life goes.
All right. I personally want to wish you luck Friday night. I'll be watching. Be sure to check out the Sean Latham Show on XM Radio. Can you kind of give us one little plug for social media and maybe talk about the XM show to wrap up here?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my social media is my name, Sean Latham, SHAUNLATHAM, across the board. That's my shit. That's my name on my social media. And my radio shows every day. I got two co-hosts, Jordan and YP. It's every day, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. East Coast time, the Sean Latham Show on Sirius XM Channel 85. That's Barstool Radio. And, you know, if you go to Barstool Sports under shows, you'll see $20 Chef in there. And that's where all my shows are. I've had over 100 episodes. And, you know, every day, like right now, we just finished up filming the moment I called you. And that's what I'm doing. And that's where you can find me.
Boom.
And I appreciate you guys for having me on your show.
Hey, man, I appreciate you. And I'll definitely be in touch. And like I said, good luck Friday. And I'm looking forward to see what you do next.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, have a good one.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, I'd like to thank you for listening into episode 1 of the One-on-One podcast with myself. Trevor Uren airs every Tuesday and Thursday. Next up on Thursday, we have former NFL wide receiver and current entrepreneur, Jeremy Curley. He'll be on the show around the same time as today. I appreciate you, Sean, for hopping on, and be sure to go buy Rough and Rowdy.